TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. A challenge to humanity. The situation in Palestine. Among my books is a Rand McNally school atlas printed in 1933. There is an entry for Palestine, right above Palestine in Texas. Page 145 shows the country bordered by Lebanon, Egypt, and Jordan. Shows the Palestinian cities of Jerusalem, Nablus, and Haifa. That map was dramatically changed with the founding of the State of Israel on Palestinian land in 1948. Palestinians were promised by a UN resolution to maintain the State of Palestine on 45% of their former land. But this promise was never filled. Instead, Israel was established over 78% of Palestine. What remained was the West Bank and Gaza Strip, and Israel later occupied both areas and established armed settlements. Presently, Ariel Sharon demands that over half of the West Bank also be given to Israel. The terrible humanitarian crisis of our time is that right now Sharon is creating the facts on the ground by building an enormous wall that cuts deep into the Palestinian West Bank. You will hear a moving, urgent report from Palestine by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He's a medical doctor and one of the leaders of the Palestinian movement that calls for an end to Israeli settlements in the West Bank and Gaza. His organization provides health and community services to more than a million Palestinians every year. Dr. Barghouti is introduced by Khalil Barhoum, program coordinator of Middle Eastern and African Literature at Stanford University. Here is Khalil Barhoum.
Allow me to start my introduction of our special guest tonight with this amazingly relevant poem. They came for our land, for what grew or could be grown on it, for the resources in it, and for our clean air and pure water. They stole these things from us, and in the taking they also stole our freeways. And the best of our leaders, killed in battle or assassinated, and now, after all that, they've come for the very last of our possessions. Now they want our pride, our history, our spiritual traditions. They want to rewrite and remake these things, to claim them for themselves. The lies and thefts just never end. This poem could have been easily written by a Palestinian poet, but it wasn't. In fact, the writer is a Native American poet, Margot Thunderbird, and the poem is aptly, if not eerily, titled "The Lies and the Thefts Just Never End." Tonight, it's both my pleasure and honor to be introducing to you Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. I had the pleasure of meeting Mustafa for the first time on a visit to the occupied territories after the outbreak of the first Palestinian Intifada almost 17 years ago. I remember hearing, among other things, about frequent Israeli closures and curfews of Palestinian towns and villages, which often lasted for extended periods of time. I also remember hearing about a heroically creative group of doctors and medical workers who, in the face of these inhumane and devastating closures, began to lug their hefty equipment on their backs and to traverse the hills and valleys of the West Bank to try to get to reach Palestinian villagers who were denied medical treatment because the occupier simply deemed it unnecessary for Palestinians to receive even basic or urgent medical care. I was clearly intrigued by the notion of mobile clinics then, and like many Palestinians, soon I became acquainted with the name Medical Relief Committees, at the heart of which, of course, was Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. And today, whether you watch Mustafa on Al Jazeera or on Nightline, whether his statements are made in Arabic or English, the force of his argument is clearly born out of his connectedness to the soil of Palestine, to the people of Palestine, to the justice of the cause of Palestine. Although the occupier has the undeniable advantage of brute force, we have justice as our weapon. Although the occupier has the U.S. government as its mainstay, we nevertheless have humanity as our guardian and protector. And although the occupier enjoys overwhelming military power, history tells us that what prevails at the end is always people's power. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome our special guest tonight, Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. His presentation is titled, "The Situation in Palestine, a Challenge to Humanity."
Thank you so much for this wonderful, warm reception. I really appreciate that. And let me start also by thanking you all for everything you have done and you are doing in support of justice and in support of the Palestinian people. Please understand that there is an element of urgency at the moment. The situation is very urgent. We cannot watch what's happening without trying to do the utmost we can to stop it. Why? Because we are really standing now at a crossroad, and I will show you that. At a crossroad where Sharon and people like him are trying to destroy any hope for the future. And let me remind you that back in 1947, there was a decision made by United Nations which proposed that there should be two states, one Israeli state over 55% of the land of Palestine and one Palestinian state in the green areas, which would be 45%. Of course, this didn't happen. Israel was established not over 55%, but over 78%. 700,000 Palestinians became refugees. Now they are about 5 million. And what remained was the West Bank and Gaza Strip. In 1988, after lots of discussions, Palestinians accepted a compromise. They were told, if you accept that compromise, the peace will come. And the compromise was that there will be a Palestinian state in West Bank, Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem. But to our great surprise, even with that acceptance, and even after Oslo agreement were signed, the same processes continued of settlements, of land appropriation, as if nothing has changed. So instead of this compromise, we got Barak's offer in the year 2000. And Barak's offer was about cutting some more pieces from the West Bank, to keep settlements, to annex them to Israel, to annex most of East Jerusalem, to prevent the Palestinian state, future state, from having borders with anybody. It was not a generous offer at all. It was misrepresentation of the reality when people were talking about a generous offer. And Israel abused to a large extent the incompetence of the Palestinian Authority, which could not explain to its own people and to the world what really happened in Camp David. But as if this is not enough, Sharon came with his own plan, and that is to take more of the land of the West Bank, 58% to be precise. And then he is now representing his view. With the building of the wall, this is what we will end up with. I don't know what you call this. You call it a state, pantostans, ghettos maybe. Definitely this is not a state. And to understand the Palestinian issue, as I said, one has to understand the story. And this is the story. From 47 to 67 to 2000 to 2003, and one can imagine what would be the next map. A process of land appropriation, annexation, settlement building that did not stop for a single minute since 1947. With wars, conflicts, or peace process, with agreements or no agreements, the same processes continued to happen. With Labour in government, or Likud in government, or a coalition in government, the same processes continue to happen. This is the story, and we must understand it. And if we want to have real peace, this process must be stopped. At the moment, during the last few years, Israel has engaged in four processes directed, in my opinion, at the destruction of the possibility of peace. First process was full reoccupation. At the moment, the whole of the West Bank is fully occupied, and 60% of Gaza is also occupied. Second process was siege and closure, which I will describe to you. Third was ferocious expansion of settlements. Since Oslo was signed in 1993, Israel created no less than 102 new settlements and expanded existing ones by 100%. And then came the last invention, which is the wall, the new Berlin Wall. The outcome of aggression on the population was severe. Of course, I'm not forgetting or negating that 940 Israelis were killed up till now during the Intifada. And in addition to 2,875 Palestinians. But to me, both Israelis and Palestinians killed are all victims of the policy of occupation. Are victims of the policy of the creation of apartheid. And for Palestinians, 2,875 people killed is a huge number. 19% of them were children. 82% were civilians. 60% were shot with live ammunition. 2,875 lives. This is a huge number for a population of 3.6 million people. It is beyond any kind of tolerance. Some of those killed are very young children. Ayman Faris, 5 years old. Dunya Matar, 3 months old in Gaza. 530 children. The number keeps increasing with the passage of time. 530 children, innocent children. They were not involved in military acts. They were not terrorists. They were simply children in their houses, in their schools, in their kindergartens, and they were killed there. 48,500 people have been injured. 2,500 of those have become permanently disabled. 10,000 of them were children. And some of these children were shot with live ammunitions, with shrapnels from Apache helicopters, missiles, or from F-16 jet fighters, all of which are, of course, American-made, and all of which are, of course, American-paid for, all of which is paid by your tax money. The lightest form that the Israeli army uses is the so-called rubber bullets. 100 children so far have lost their eyes because of the so-called rubber bullets. But these children are lucky because they did not die. Many others have died because these are not rubber bullets. These are metallic shards or cylinders that are covered with a thin piece of rubber. And we call them the nightmare of the neurosurgeon because if they hit somebody's head, they penetrate the skull, and they establish a track in the brain. And if the neurosurgeon tries to remove the bullet, he ends up hurting a great amount of the brain tissue, killing the patient. And if you leave the bullet there, because it's heavy, each time the patient moves his or her head, the bullet will move, and creating more damage. So, and of course, eventually killing the patient. It is a nightmare, because this is the lightest form of weapon that is used, and when it hits the upper part of the body, it's like a death sentence. Assassination is a regular policy that Israel is practicing now. And by international law, assassination is extrajudicial execution, where the government of Israel makes of itself the prosecutor, the judge, and the executor at the same time. So far, no less than 310 people have been assassinated, of whom 151 persons were bystanders or people who were not targeted. They were simply civilians who happened to be in the place where assassination is practiced. Of those, 34 were children, and no less than 25 were women. Arrests and detention is another practice. Since the beginning of the Intifada, Israel conducted 28,000 arrests. 7,000 of these people remain in jail, and many of them are children. Many of them are under the so-called administrative detention. But what was most shocking to me is the figure, the number of Palestinians arrested since the beginning of occupation. We've counted 650,000 arrests since 1967. Considering that the vast majority of those were male population, that means that 40% of the male population in the occupied territories have been arrested and sent to jail since the beginning of occupation. Imagine, 40%. And then comes the second process, which is closure and siege. Many of you are familiar with the checkpoints. Those who go to the occupied territories and have been there know what the checkpoint means. Up till now, according to United Nations, there is 734 checkpoints in the West Bank alone. And these checkpoints increase with peace initiatives. In the beginning of the first year, we had 132 checkpoints. Then Senator Mitchell came with his plan, Mitchell Report, and the number increased to 242. Then Tenet came with his plan, and they became 360. Then the roadmap came, and the checkpoints became 420. And now we have 734. God knows if another peace initiative is started, what we will have. These are not simple checkpoints where people are checked and then allowed to cross. These are places where constant humiliation is practiced. But just for those who have not been there, let me give you an idea. Usually a trip from Ramallah in this region to Hebron would take about 45 minutes because it's only 45 kilometers. I'm sure many of you have made this trip today to come here. It's not difficult. But in our case, this trip that usually would take 45 minutes would take now 9 hours. And people have to change the car at least 11 times. Because each time they arrive at a checkpoint, they have to get off the car and walk through the checkpoint or around the checkpoint and then take another car and so on and so forth. We are the first nation in human history, according to my knowledge, that has been prevented from using its own roads and streets for more than 2.5 years. We don't have the luxury of driving a car anymore. We're not allowed to. Even ambulances are not allowed to cross some checkpoints. And the humiliation is indescribable. This photo shows you what happens sometimes at checkpoints when people are obliged to take off their clothes. Some of them could be lucky, like this guy in Gaza, because he was allowed to keep his underwear and his undershirt. But this man, unfortunately, was not that lucky, and he was kept naked for 2 hours in the street under the rain before the Israeli army would allow anybody to get close to him. This leads, of course, to serious complications, one of which is that 95 people up till now have lost their lives because they were not allowed to cross the checkpoints to receive medical treatment. We're talking about people with heart attacks, women in labor, people who need kidney dialysis. There was a woman I know very well. Her name was Aisha. She was from Qibya, the same village that Sharon destroyed in 1953. This woman was 22 years old. She had kidney problems, and she needed kidney dialysis 3 times a week. And one day there was a checkpoint in front of her village, and she and her father tried so many times to cross without success for a whole week. And finally she got very sick. They called us. We sent an ambulance at 12 midnight. But the army would not let the ambulance pass. And she died at home. This is one case of many of people who die because of checkpoints. Tell me, if that has happened in any other country, what would be the reaction? Why is it, in our case, that the life of Palestinians do not count and the Israeli behavior is allowed to be impunitive to international law? 55 women have been obliged so far to give birth at checkpoints. Many of them have lost their children, at least 20. And it goes on a daily basis. Sometimes the army attacks the ambulances, like in the case of Tul Karim, where you see the tank here attacking 2 ambulances while they were carrying patients. And sometimes people are left to bleed to death without medical assistance, like has happened to Imad Subhi Abu Zahra, who was a Palestinian journalist, who on the 11th of July was injured while he was covering the story, what's happening. And as you can see, this man is desperately trying to stop the bleeding with both hands. And he could have been saved if he just received medical treatment or first aid. They wouldn't let anybody get close to him for a whole half hour. And this man was fainting gradually till he died, bleeding to death without any medical assistance. Destruction of homes is another practice that is still happening. You're talking about homes, offices, government buildings, private businesses, cultural institutions, schools, medical facilities that are attacked regularly. Our office was attacked in April 2002, and the army destroyed it completely. They didn't leave anything. And on their way out of the office, after 24 days of occupying it, they took the only bibliography that existed in the country of health research and burned it in front of the office, shouting our names and cursing us. The destruction of homes is very serious. Up till now, 60,781 houses have been either partially or completely demolished. One case I want to describe to you is the case of Rafah in Gaza. Because now they speak about withdrawal from Gaza. They try to create the impression as if there is a withdrawal that will take place. What has been happening during the last several months is that the army is regularly attacking the area here, demolishing on average 3 to 5 houses every day. I went there recently for the first time since 3 years I was allowed in. I stood there, and people explained to me what happens. People would be sitting, for instance, here in their home, in front of the wall. There is a wall there. And the wall has gates. And suddenly the gate would open, and huge caterpillar bulldozers will come out with tanks, and they will head towards the house. And people have only minutes to run away from the house without being able to carry anything, and then the bulldozer would crush the house and destroy it within minutes. This has been happening regularly on a daily basis. If Israel was going to withdraw from Gaza, why are they destroying houses in this region? Children sometimes try to go back to get their toys or bags or books, and they shoot them. 82 children below the age of 14 have already been shot and killed by the Israeli army in this area. Does the American press report that to you? Of course not. If this is not ethnic cleansing, then what is it?
That was Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He spoke in the San Francisco Bay Area in March 2004. He's a medical doctor. His organization cares for over 1 million Palestinians every year. And he is the secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, or Mubadra, co-founded by the late Professor Edward Said. When TUC Radio returns, you will hear more about Dr. Barghouti's vision for peace, a solution carried by civil society, the youth, and the women of Palestine. He will explain why he calls for an end to the Israeli occupation, removal of illegal Israeli settlements, and a just solution to the rights of 5 million Palestinian refugees. You can find more information on Palestine and Dr. Mustafa Barghouti on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get information how to order a copy of the complete one-hour tape or CD of A Challenge to Humanity by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order really helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone, or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Moriah Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.